This is the electromagnetic spectrum. First of all, what is electromagnetic waves? Well, these are particles of energy that don't have any mass. And visible light is what we know best. The range from red to purple is just varying in frequency. Then below visible light, we have infrared radiation. That's life on Earth would not be possible without the heat from the sun. That's infrared radiation. And below that, we have the communication frequencies. And basically, most of those are what would be called microwaves. Now, people have been skeptical that there could be any adverse health effect at lower frequencies because obviously life on Earth was dependent on both visible light and infrared radiation. But when you put a potato in your microwave oven, it obviously cooks the potato. So it's not a totally benign thing. And what I'm going to talk about is the magnitude of the evidence that there are adverse health effects of these forms of radio frequency radiation below that of visible light at intensities that don't just cook your brain or cook your potato. The International Agency for Research on Cancer is part of the World Health Organization. It's based in Lyon, France. And these are the ultimate authorities on what things cause cancer. And in 2011, they rated radio frequency radiation as a possible human carcinogen. And that evidence was based primarily in the fact that people that talk on their cell phone for long periods of time and don't pay attention to the recommendations to keep it away from your head, but hold it right up against their head, which most of us do because no one knows about that fine print. If you talk on your cell phone for 10 years or more, multiple hours a day, your risk of developing brain cancer is sky high. And it's the worst kind of brain cancer, the glioblastoma. That's the kind Ted Kennedy had, John McCain had, all people that spent a lot of time on their cell phone. The reason it wasn't a stronger recommendation at this time was that nobody had ever demonstrated that animals developed cancer from cell phone frequency radiations. That changed a year ago when the U.S. National Toxicology Program exposed rats for the duration of their lifetime to cell phone frequency radiations, and they developed the same two cancers that we see in people. Radio frequency radiation at intense level causes cancer. Everyone thinks our government's going to protect us from anything that are dangerous. Well, think again. In the U.S., the Federal Communications Commission is the organization responsible for setting standards for our cell phones, for our Wi-Fi, and things like that. Basically, the FCC says if your brain doesn't heat when you talk on a cell phone, or if your body doesn't heat when you're in a Wi-Fi environment, there's no problem. Well, that is just, it totally ignores an enormous body of evidence from scientists around the world that show there are multiple adverse health effects. And now we're beginning to understand that there's a whole syndrome called electrohypersensitivity, where some people are unusually sensitive to exposure to radio frequency radiation and even electricity-related magnetic fields, and develop a syndrome that consists of fatigue and headache and a feeling their brain isn't working right, and pain of various sorts. But the FCC hasn't really dealt with this. Now, here's the guidelines in the US, Australia, Canada, relative to some other countries in the world. You can see how outrageously out of sync the US is with other countries in terms of recommendations, in terms of exposure. It's short-term exposure, but think about our lives. We are exposed to this radiation continuously. Now, where did those limits come from? Well, they came from the engineering community and the physics community, not the health community. EPA discontinued all of their research functions on electromagnetic fields. NIEHS hasn't had any activity on this issue for years. So the question that short-term exposure can cause thermal damage, yes, but even there, many cell phones exceed the guidelines, especially when people hold them to their ears. So we've got real problems in that many people unknowingly, they don't know this issue, And yet they're exposed at dangerous levels of radio frequency radiation. One other issue has been that there weren't clinical chemistry tests. You couldn't take a blood sample or urine sample and identify people that suffered from this syndrome of electrohypersensitivity. Electrohypersensitivity, these are relatively nonspecific symptoms. We all get headaches every now and then. We all feel like our brain doesn't work right, quite often. We all get tired. But when people find that if they go into the presence of high levels electromagnetic fields, those symptoms appear in spades. And many people are totally disabled because of their having to be in an environment where they're exposed. We are beginning now to find rigorous clinical tests that will distinguish electrohypersensitivity subjects from other people. It's a real disease, and it can be very disabling. Students that are electrosensitive that have to go to school, but the school has so much radio frequency radiation that the students get ill. You think about schools today. Most schools have Wi-Fi throughout the school. Think about the computer classroom. Now, it's very important that everybody have access to the internet. It's a critical part of our society. But if you have 20 or 30 kids in a wireless computer classroom, those kids are basically in a mini microwave oven because all of the laptops are communicating. And is it any wonder that some of the kids become ill? I say no. This is just one example of a situation in school. This is where the wireless equipment is close to where students are. So, of course, the students are going to be highly exposed. Now, not everyone is going to respond with the same symptoms. There's a variety of susceptibilities. There are probably a lot of people that have symptoms that don't recognize what they come from. But in schools, it's pretty clear when a child gets a headache every time he goes to school and recovers when they go home. Access points in school classrooms and dorms that are against Federal Communication Commission guidelines are common. And these are just examples in one school of that. Now, these are measurements taken in a meter that detects radio frequency radiation. The top is from a school that has limited use of devices. And the bottom is from a school that has extensive use. Each of those peaks is a peak of radio frequency radiation. And, you know, one of the issues is the FCC standards will average those over long periods of time. We have increasing evidence that it isn't just the average overall that's important. It's the rapid on and off. And you see how many of those massive peaks there are there. Here are just some other examples of school readings versus the coffee shop readings. Now, coffee shops often have Wi-Fi, but you can see how some schools, because of this idea that you have to make everybody accessible to the internet by their laptop, by their pad, by their cell phone, and that's the result in terms of exposure. Almost every school has Wi-Fi. Almost every school administrator is oblivious to the fact, or don't want to hear, that they may be putting their children at risk. That's why we're here tonight, to try to let all of you know that this is an issue that's important to you, it's important to your family, and that we need to do something about it. It's very difficult to put genies back in the bottle. We're not going to go back to a pre-wireless age. But there's so many obvious things we can do that would reduce our exposure and increase our health, and we need to find how to go about and do that. Thank you very much.